Good morning, Your Honors. May it please the Court. Christopher M. Alston and Jason R. Donovan on behalf of the appellant James R. Feltman. I would like to reserve 2 minutes for rebuttal, if I may. This matter is between two parties who are both fiduciaries for their respective estates. This appeal involves the failure of one of those fiduciaries to meet his duty to properly administer the assets of his estate to the detriment of his creditors. Mr. Feltman is the bankruptcy trustee of the estate of Certified HR Services Company, and he is pursuing a claim in the receivership of the Cascade National Insurance Company. The claim is based upon the transfer of millions of dollars by a company called Midwest Merger Management, who assigned its cause of action to Mr. Feltman in the bankruptcy case. Like Mr. Feltman, the insurance commissioner is the receiver who has duties to properly administer the assets of the estate that come into his possession or control. But rather as acting as an administrator, it appears that the receiver has acted as a litigant intent on winning at all cost. Each time the trustee has explained why the receiver's basis for denying his claim is wrong, the receiver has come up with a new argument, sometimes even going as far as to misstating the record or ignoring facts and evidence that are in the receiver's possession. And moreover, according to the receiver, there's never going to be any money to pay my client's claim. Well, if that's the case, then pursuing the legal fees and objecting to the claim seems to be an apparent waste of resources. Another prime example is spending $2.5 million in a federal court litigation against Midwest and other parties to pursue and obtain a $19 million judgment, which the deputy receiver has said in his declaration that there is no reasonable prospect of recovering on that judgment. So it appears that the receiver is spending tremendous amounts of money on legal fees in litigation rather than trying to resolve the insurance claims and reserve money for creditors of this case. We believe those facts demonstrated a reasonable suspicion of negligence or malfeasance that justified conducting discovery, which under the statute required the court to conduct an in-camera inspection of documents that our client had requested. So in our view, the trial court has erred twice in this case. And the first error was affirming the denial of my client's claim. Now, by way of a little more background, my client filed a claim for $12 million based upon monies that this company, Midwest, had transferred to Cascade. 4 years later, the receiver issued an initial determination and said, we're going to deny your claim. The receiver said you received $8 million worth of insurance services and you received stock in the company, Cascade, for the $4.3 million. In response, we conceded that insurance services were received, but we objected, saying we never received the stock, or by we, Midwest, the company, never received the stock. Rather, a company called Gudeman and Weiss received the stock, but Midwest paid the $4.3 million. So in the final determination, the receiver changed its position. It now said, well, Gudeman and Weiss was really a front for Midwest, so in effect, Midwest received the $4.3 million. And the evidence allegedly for that conclusion, according to the receiver, was the federal court litigation, quote, established, close quote, that Gudeman and Weiss was, quote, a front for the purchase of the stock. That's found in Clerk's Paper 500. This statement was not accurate, because the federal court litigation did not establish any such thing. And at oral argument before the trial court, it was acknowledged that, in fact, the federal court litigation did not litigate and did not resolve the issue of whether or not the receiver, whether or not Gudeman and Weiss was a front. So, in essence, the receiver had to concede that a substantial basis for its final determination was, in fact, not true. But rather than, again, conceding and letting the claim be allowed, they continued to fight, coming up with new arguments in every subsequent brief. Further arguments included that the Midwest received the reasonably equivalent value because it received the insurance services. Well, sure it did. It received the insurance services, and it paid $8 million for it, and owes another $19 million, according to the federal court litigation. But it received a bill for that $19 million. It put another $4.3 million in and received nothing in return. It received nothing. It didn't get the stock. So the only entity that had any possibility in the upside was Gunneman & Weiss. The receiver also asserted as a basis for denying the claim that it was late filed, and because there was never going to be any money to pay the late filed claims, therefore there was no basis to allow it, which of course is not a reasonable basis for denying actual liability. More problematic from our perspective is we believe there is money to pay this claim at the end of the day. We believe that the receiver has overestimated and over-reserved by tens of millions of dollars money to pay claims. And at clerk's papers 605, 608, the declaration of my client goes through the analysis explaining why it appears that by tens of millions of dollars there should be money left over, but the receiver for some reason is reserving $30 million to handle claims we estimate will cost about $2 to $3 million. To adjudicate. So based upon not only the changing position by the receiver in this case and objecting to our claim, but also based upon the receiver's conduct in administering the assets by spending millions of dollars to collect an uncollectible judgment, it was our belief that there was a need for discovery for us to at least get the opportunity to find out why is the receiver spending all this money, why is the receiver reserving all this money for apparent reason, at least reasons we could understand. And we believe that based upon the conduct of the receiver in this case, it justified under the Uniform Insurance Liquidation Act for the court to conduct an in-camera review of the documents requested by the receiver. Unfortunately, the trial court erred both times by affirming the final determination and disallowing our claim, and also by refusing to conduct the in-camera inspection and reviewing the documents that would allow us to at least try to understand why the receiver is acting in this fashion. So primarily then, at the end of the day, we would ask this court to overrule and reverse the order that the trial court had entered, affirming the final determination and denying our discovery. So unless the panel has any questions.
Thank you.
Thank you.
May it please the court, counsel. Victoria Vreeland for Mike Kreidler, the insurance commissioner, who is the receiver for Cascade just in this matter. Contrary to appellant's argument, this issue is not about the administration of this receivership. This issue is whether this court should affirm the trial court's decision to affirm the receiver's determination acting as adjudicator, and we're only concerned with the funds paid of $4.3 million paid through Midwest to Cascade, actually to its holding company Legend, between December 2003 and April 2004. This court is called upon to determine whether the trustee presented sufficient evidence to meet its burden of proof, and it's a pretty high burden of proof, for a fraudulent transfer, and there are two elements. One is insolvency. They have to show first that Midwest was insolvent or about to be go insolvent when it paid that $4.3 million. There is not one shred of evidence in this record to demonstrate insolvency of Midwest during those specific time frames when that money was paid. And that $4.3 million was paid to shore up Cascade, to keep it in business so it could write the workers' comp policies to cover Midwest's obligation to ASRC and the certified group to provide workers' compensation for those 15,000 workers in California. If Cascade had not been shorn up, it could not have written those policies. It would have been in receivership much sooner. There's no evidence that they presented of insolvency whatsoever. In fact, what the trustee is attempting to argue is that it's the receiver's obligation to present evidence to dispute their claim. This court can stop this analysis at that point because the trustee has two burdens, insolvency as well as that Midwest did not receive reasonably equivalent value. The decision of this court can rest solely on the trustee's failure to prove any insolvency during those time periods in question. And secondly, if the court goes on to the second prong of a fraudulent transfer claim, it is reasonably equivalent value. Has the trustee proven that it did not, Midwest or certified, did not receive reasonably equivalent value? Now, Midwest, as the record reflects, Midwest was set up by Huff and Pixler to avoid and to conceal Huff's relationship and involvement in any insurance. Midwest had an obligation to the ASRC group, the certified group, to provide workers' compensation. It took all the money to provide it, and it had an obligation to provide it. It was desperate to obtain it. In order to obtain the workers' comp coverage, they used Cascade, which had a license in California, to provide workers' comp. In order to have Cascade provide the insurance, it had to provide enough capital and surplus. Midwest did that. Midwest, in order to conceal Huff's relationship, had Goodman and Weiss act as an entity to hold the stock. Midwest, and the record reflects, was a lender of money. It claims it was a lender of the money to Goodman and Weiss to hold the stock. And in the final analysis, Midwest received over $27 million worth of insurance coverage that is still being paid out and has only paid a total of $8 million in insurance coverage and $4.3 million in capital or surplus. Now, the trustee also argues that there is no, it didn't receive value because it didn't get the stock. But as we can see, we don't just look at the form, we look at the substance, we look at the totality of the circumstances. And it received the right and the ability to meet its contractual obligations. That's an asset, that's property, it's an intangible asset. I want to address the issue now that the trustee is arguing fairly vehemently on appeal. The trustee claims that this case is about the administration of this receivership by the insurance commissioner and challenging the efficacy, the reasonableness of that receivership. And in that regard, the trustee, only when its claim is denied, wants the court to review all of the receivership records and administration records of the receivership. It relies solely on RCW 4498017, I believe that's the site, which is a statute that is designed to protect the records of the insurance company in receivership from the Public Disclosure Act. It's designed, and it says, if a party who has an interest or can demonstrate a reasonable suspicion can obtain the records that the commissioner has obtained in his capacity as receiver, but only if it files a motion and only if it can show certain criteria. Now, it doesn't say, that statute does not say that any party who has an interest or who claims some suspicion of malfeasance can get all the records of the receivership, all the records and all the communications and everything that the receiver and that the insurance commissioner has done with regard to administration of that receivership. It's limited to the records of the company. The other point I want to make is that the trustee, which Judge McPhee acknowledged and used in his decision, the trustee has had 4 or 5 years to claim or to challenge the acts of the receiver and administration of this estate. The trustee's never bothered to challenge that until its claim was denied. The trustee has all the records, or should have all the records, of Midwest and all of the parties that it made its agreement with. The trustee's proof to try to show any kind of malfeasance is limited to the declaration of Mr. Feldman. Mr. Feldman has no experience in workers' comp, doesn't present sufficient evidence, and we submit that on this record, that the trustee has failed to meet his burden of proof on his fraudulent transfer claim, on both elements, but the court need only address the first one, solvency. But if the court does go to the second element, there is ample evidence of support for the receiver's adjudication determination and the Superior Court's upholding of that adjudication. And on the discovery issue, there is just no abuse of discretion. Unless the court has any further questions, I really have nothing further to add to this argument. My time is not up, but I think that what I do want to say is it is incredible that the trustee can come in here and argue without even being part of this receivership for the last nearly 10 years and argue that it did not receive reasonable value. Midwest or the underlying companies did not receive reasonable value when Midwest and the underlying companies still owe another $19 million to Cascade Insurance for the coverage that they did receive. Thank you.
Thank you. I guess let's talk about the timing first. We submitted a proof of claim, and it took the receiver 4 years to respond. So to suggest that we've been sitting on our hands during this case is not accurate. Secondly, let's talk about the basis for denying the claim. And we hear that we failed to prove that Midwest was insolvent as of 2003-2004. I will first note that was not a basis for denying the claim. It appeared neither in the initial determination nor in the final determination. That argument was raised for the first time in the reply brief in support of the motion for approval of the final determination. Yet another example of the bases for denying our claim continuing to shift throughout this process. Moreover, the receiver knows that Midwest was insolvent. That was what the federal court litigation was all about. As we pointed out in the record, they accused Midwest of being a Ponzi scheme, which by definition is insolvent from its inception. So you will not hear the receiver say that Midwest was solvent at that time, because Midwest certainly was not. With respect to the fact or the allegation that Midwest received value because it got the benefit of the insurance services, it received a bill for those insurance services. It received nothing extra for the $4.3 million for the stock that was given to somebody else. And finally, with respect to the discovery issue, we do submit that the receiver's conduct is at issue here. The expenditure of millions of dollars in pursuit of litigation that has no benefit to creditors and reserving $30 million for claims that should take about $2 or $3 million to resolve is an abuse of its discretion. Thank you.
Thank you. Alexander and Sam.